This is The State of Things. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. There's nothing quite like the magic and romance of revisiting classic Hollywood films. But nowadays, it's sometimes hard to grab the popcorn and get cozy on the couch to watch an old flick without feeling a little bit unsettled. In too many of these movies, sexism ran rampant, and a woman's gender often determined the depth of her character and just how many times she needed to be rescued. My guest Laura Boyes is on a mission to look past the two-dimensional secretaries and helpless blondes, and in a new film series, she highlights movies where female characters shined for their wit and for the creative ways they wielded power and subverted societal norms. Laura has launched the Movie Diva film series at the Carolina Theater in downtown Durham. She's also a film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh and our recurring expert on movies on the radio. Laura, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Anita.
So tell me a little bit about what inspired this series. I know you really wanted to make people laugh, but what else were you looking for?
Yes. So a lot of classic Hollywood, as you said, does not sit all that well with people these days. Women often take a backseat to the heroic or comic exploits of men. And I really like to see this corrected. So that's part of what I was trying to do with this film series.
There's also that you, a woman, are curating the films that we're seeing. I know there was a recent report from the Annenberg Inclusion Initiative that found that more than 75% of critics are men, based on reviews of the top 100 films. So how do you think the people that critique and choose the films that we see may impact our understanding of
film? It makes an enormous difference. I wrote for the Independent Weekly for a long time, and I know that the films that I wanted to represent were very different from the ones that the mainstream seemed to validate. And if you look up, for example, on Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic, and they'll say, oh, this film is, 88% or whatever. And I always have to say, who's reviewing them? And you look down the list, and it's almost exclusively male voices. And I had a conversation years ago with my boss at the museum, and he said, I'm going to prove to you that Rotten Tomatoes is accurate. I'm going to tell you the greatest movie ever made according to Rotten Tomatoes. And there was a pause, and he said, Chicken Run. So I said, I rest my case.
Well, the Washington Post did do an analysis of these Rotten Tomato numbers, and what they said was that men and women agree on the polarities. They agree on the movies that are really good, and they agree on the movies that are really bad, but it's the movies in the middle where they tend to disagree. So there may be some narratives that appeal more to women than men. Are there some of those narratives, you think, and are any of those the ones you're trying to highlight in this series?
Well, women are interested in movies that, this is a generalization, but have some sort of emotional context. They're interested in movies that have characters, have relationships, trying to work out sort of interpersonal dynamics. And they're less interested in watching cars being blown up just because it looks really cool. So this is what I'm trying to appeal to, because I've certainly shown movies at the museum, recent movies, and people say, why have I never heard of this museum? Why have I never heard of this movie? And it's because men are reviewing them, and men do not care about a movie about a young woman going to a Jane Austen theme park. No matter how good the women might find it to be, the men are just not interested. So it's a movie that doesn't get a wide release, and it's a movie that doesn't show up on, your Netflix algorithms or whatever.
Okay, well, take us to one of the first movies that is going to be in your series, the 1937 film The Awful Truth. Tell us a bit about it and maybe set up the clip that we're going to play.
So The Awful Truth is from a time when the idea of people getting divorced was very interesting, because it used to be really a till death do you part kind of situation. And this film is about two people who are obviously perfect for each other, who get in a huge argument over nothing, and then they decide to get divorced. And they both immediately get different partners. The husband, Jerry Waringer, is interested in a showgirl in a nightclub, and his wife becomes very interested in an Oklahoma millionaire, and they end up encountering themselves at a fashionable night spot, and this is part of the scene.
All right, let's listen.
She seems like a nice girl.
Yes, indeed. But enough about Dixie Belle for the moment. Let's talk about yourselves. Ah, so you're going to live in Oklahoma, eh, Lucy? How I envy you. Ever since I was a small boy, that name has been filled with magic for me. Oklahoma.
We're going to live right in Oklahoma City.
Not Oklahoma City itself. Lucy, you lucky girl. No more running around the night spots. No more prowling around in New York shops. I should think of you every time a new show opens and say to myself, she's well out of it.
New York's all right for a visit,
but
I wouldn't
want
to
live
here.
I know I'll enjoy Oklahoma City.
But of course, and if it should get dull, you can always go over to Tulsa for the weekend.
That's a clip from the 1937 film The Awful Truth by director Leo McCarey. I'm here with film curator Laura Boies. Her new Movie Diva film series screens every Wednesday at 7 p.m. starting tomorrow at the Carolina Theater in Durham. So tell us more about this genre of film. It's the screwball comedy.
Screwball comedy. So screwball comedy came into existence because of the production code, which was a censorship that the movies adopted so that there wouldn't be any kind of government censorship, because a lot of religious and there used to be lots of women's clubs that were very influential that found movies were entirely too racy. So there was guidelines written by some people who were very active in the Catholic Church to, of course, protect the sanctity of womanhood and to protect impressionable young minds from things that might be disturbing to them. So that cuts out all of the racy talk. There was no more undressing on the screen. Women's clothes could not show any cleavage or any breast movement under the dresses. Married couples were no longer allowed to sleep in double beds. And if you did come over to the single bed of your spouse, 1 foot had to remain on the ground at all times. So there were all of these things that were prohibited, which, of course, nothing is more exciting to a filmmaker than to try to get around all of the prohibitions that have been set up by the sanctimonious.
Well, and it actually gave filmmakers the opportunity to cast women in a new light because of these restrictions.
Yes, and because a lot of the writers in this era had come from Broadway, they were much more familiar with sort of at least an equality of wisecrack, where the men and the women were equally funny and could kind of hold their own. So the production code had control over American movies starting in 1934 until the middle 1960s. When things started to fall apart. But until then, these things were taken very seriously, and getting around it was something that these filmmakers took great pleasure in.
Let's jump to the next clip from the 1941 film, The Lady Eve. Will you set this one up for us?
So this is written and directed by Preston Sturges, who had a period of great creativity in the early 1940s. And The Lady Eve, he kind of wrote his own autobiography into it, both as the very uptight, good son played by Henry Fonda, and the rather wild and bohemian Card Sharp, who's played by Barbara Stanwyck. And in this clip, Henry Fonda is sitting quietly on an ocean liner in the dining room, reading his book, trying to ignore all of the women who are trying to attract his attention because he's a millionaire.
Let's hear it.
Look over to your left, bookworm. There's a girl pining for you. A little further. Just a little further. There. Wasn't that worth looking for? See those nice store teeth all beaming at you. Why, she recognizes you. She's up, she's down. She can't make up her mind. She's up again. She recognizes you. She's coming over to speak to you. The suspense is killing me. Why, for heaven's sake, aren't you Fuzzy Old Hammer I went to manual training school with in Louisville? Oh, you're not? Well, you certainly look exactly like him. It's certainly a remarkable resemblance. But if you're not going to ask me to sit down, I suppose you're not going to ask me to sit down. I'm very sorry. I certainly hope I haven't caused you any embarrassment, you so-and-so. I wonder if my tie's on straight. I certainly upset them, don't I? Now, who else is after me? Ah, the lady champion wrestler. Wouldn't she make a houseful? Oh, you don't like her either. Well, what are you going to do about it? Oh, you just can't stand it anymore. You're leaving. These women don't give you a moment's peace, do they? Well, go ahead. Go sulk in your cabin. Go soak your head and see if I care.
Very sorry, sir.
Why don't you look where you're going?
Why don't I look?
What you did to my shoe, you knocked the heel off.
Oh, I did? Well, I'm certainly sorry.
You didn't? You can just take me right down to my cabin for another pair of slippers.
Oh, well, certainly. I guess it's the least I can do. By the way, my name's Pike.
Oh, everybody knows that. Nobody's talking about anything else. This is my father, Colonel Harrington. My name is Jean. It's really Eugenia. Come on.
That's a clip from the 1941 film The Lady Eve by Preston Sturges. It stars Barbara Stanwyck, Charles Coburn, and Henry Fonda. And my guest is film curator Laura Boies, whose new Movie Diva film series screens Wednesdays at 7 p.m., starting tomorrow at the Carolina Theater in Durham. What do you think this film and the others sort of illuminate about how comedy specifically allows women to sort of subvert norms?
Well, in comedies, women are allowed to be much more aggressive. They're allowed to speak up for themselves because being funny kind of gives them a pass. A lot of times, if a woman in a regular, you know, melodrama would trip a man to get his attention, there would be something almost sinister in that kind of aggression. But in a comedy, it gives her a lot more freedom to behave as she would like to.
So that sort of takes us into the next film, Born Yesterday. We don't have a clip, but give us a basic plot of this film.
So Born Yesterday stars Judy Holliday and Broderick Crawford and William Holden. And it's about a corrupt businessman played by Broderick Crawford who comes to Washington essentially to buy a congressman to help him get some legislation through the Congress. And he finds that his girlfriend, played by Judy Holliday, seems a little rough around the edges. So he hires someone to try to make her more acceptable for Washington society. Of course, completely ignoring the fact that he is completely inappropriate. Yes. But he decides that he's going to get her educated. And when she finds out what he's up to, then she and her new companion undermine his plot to take over Congress with his corruption. So, and one of the things that's incredibly interesting about this film is that Judy Holliday was called before the House on Un-American Activities Committee to be quizzed on her communist associations in the early 1950s. And she answered all of the questions in front of the Senate in the voice and the character of her dizzy chorus girl, Billy Dawn, from Born Yesterday. And the senators didn't get that she was putting them on, because once again, comedy has such enormous power. And so they kind of gave her a pass because they didn't think anyone so stupid could possibly be a communist, I guess.
So she used the fact that people perceived her as ignorant to her advantage.
To her advantage, because she was really a highly intelligent person, just playing a stupid character, which is sometimes difficult for people to separate, apparently.
Okay, take us to the last film now, 9 to 5. I think many of us know this one well, but will you set up the clip for us?
So 9 to 5, which was done by Jane Fonda and her production company, she became interested in the issues of secretaries in the workplace through her own work in the anti-war and civil rights movement, where she realized that women had the same goals, but yet somehow they were still getting the coffee for the men, and that this was a major a creative moment for second wave feminism. And she and her production partner interviewed a lot of office workers and found that while they really enjoyed their work, the fact that they got so little respect was what they really disliked. And as they were interviewing these women about their workplace experiences, they got the idea to ask if they had any fantasies about getting revenge on their bosses, and found that the answers were so hilarious that the film had to be a comedy instead of a drama, as they had intended.
Well, I'm going to skip the clip because we're running short on time, but you all can find it at our website, stateofthings.org. And I want to talk about this idea of movies as a space where we can play out fantasies.
Yes.
And I know you're interested in being able to play out the fantasies that are not just those of straight white men. And to me, this movie is a fantasy of, you know, what would it be like if an office were run entirely by women? They could make all the rules. They could determine all of the policies.
I mean, it's a giddy fantasy, but why does it have to be? You know, and the thing about a lot of the classic movies, which is a lot of the ones before 9 to 5, where we're getting a little more representation in some ways, is that there is in old movies a way to look at them in a different way and see that that representation exists, you know, outside of what we're being presented with, that you get to know that, you know, certain actors were gay and that there's that kind of a subtext that comes into what you're seeing on the screen. And I think that even though it seems like the representation is limited, the fantasy to be funny, to be powerful, to be rich, to find a person that you enjoy being with is something that is applicable to every person.
We only have about 30 seconds left, but I know this has been an interesting year in Hollywood. We had, you know, we had movies like Wonder Woman where this proved that women want to come out and see.
How many times do we have to prove that, Anita? Please tell me.
We want to see representation of ourselves and of complex characters. We want women to be writers and directors. We want to change who's critiquing these films. I mean, do you see the needle having moved far enough that it's, you know, are we at a tipping point?
Oh, it's so tiny. I mean, it seems like it's getting better, but it's in such tiny increments because women need to be in charge of studios that make the decisions that give these jobs to female directors and female creators. And that has really been limited. It's much better on television because it's perceived, I think, as being a less powerful medium in some way. So women can get in through that particular door. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. Well, at least we have you curating a film series for us. That gives us some options. Laura Boyes is a film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh and our recurring guest on Movies on the Radio. Her new Movie Diva film series screens Wednesdays at 7 p.m. starting tomorrow at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the series and everything else we talked about today at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Anisha Rao.